Morning. Today's daf in Menachos is Kuf. We are on Shadi Testament Beis. We went through the Mishnah yesterday. We're right after the Mishnah, Tanya. We're beginning with a Braisa. We are approaching the end of the 11th parak in Mirtzah Hashem today. We're going to finish the 11th parak of the Masechta. And our primary purpose this morning is to focus in on the Lechem Apanim and the She'el Lechem, mostly Lechem Apanim. The Mishnah yesterday went through procedurally the Shulchanos in the Beis HaMikdash. There were three Shulchanos in the Beis HaMikdash. There was the Shulchan, and I am not focusing on yesterday's Gemara regarding the additional Shulchanos that were made by Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech made another 10 Shulchanos, which we spent yesterday trying to configure exactly how it fit into the Beis HaMikdash. But in other words, leave that aside for now. There are three Shulchanos, there are three tables. So one is the Shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash, and the other two were in the Ulam. One was made up of silver, the other one was made up of gold. And we discussed the procedure of exactly how it went in, how it came out, how the new breads came in and the old ones came out. Something which we are familiar with. Again, I'm just going to review and repeat, because it's basic for the entirety of today's daf. The Lechem Apanim was arranged on Shabbos. What about last Shabbos? Last Shabbos we also did that, and the Shabbos before that. In other words, and the cycle basically goes like this. On Shabbos, you take the new Lechem Apanim that were just baked. Now, when were they baked? So we're going to assume that they were baked before Shabbos. The baking of the Lechem Apanim cannot occur on Shabbos, although that's subject to a debate. But we're going to assume that that's the case. In fact, the Mishnayos in the course of today's daf is assuming they were not baked on Shabbos. So they were baked on Friday. Shabbos comes along, and the Lechem Apanim are now going to be placed on the Shulchan. Last week's Lechem Apanim are going to be taken off. And you remember in the Mishnah that we learned yesterday exactly how the new ones are put on and the old ones are taken off, so that's subject to a debate. The Tanakhama of the Mishnah taught us that as the new ones are being put on, the old ones are sliding off. And so basically what the Mishnah describes is there's not a momentary lapse of lechem on the table. There's a second opinion in the Mishnah, that of Rabbi Yossi, that says, no, I know the Torah says lefanai tamid, that has to be constantly there. But according to Rabbi Yossi, that just simply means that you can't go a day without the bread. But in other words, but as long as the bread is on the table, so you can take off the old bread, last week's lechem, and then later today you'll put on the new lechem, and that's fine, and it's not a violation of lefanai tamid. Fine. And then the division, the distribution of the lechem upon him, and that's where we basically, that's a summary of the Mishnah. We start with the Gemara Tanya. The Gemara quotes a Braisa, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Afilu Silkes, Yishon HaShachris, V'sider Es HaChadosh, Arvis Em B'Kachlom. So you could take the old ones off in the morning, you could put the new ones on in the afternoon, and that would be just fine. Elamani Mekayim Lefanai Tamid. And what about the Pasuk? Shelo Yelin Shulchan Melo Lechem. It just simply means that a day is not to go by without the Lechem being on the table. But as long as you have, at one point today, Lechem, so it's a fulfillment of Lefanai Tamid. So, if we take Rabbi Yossi's words to heart, here's what we arrive at as a conclusion. You learn a chapter in the morning and a chapter in the evening. So you're fulfilling the Pasuk. The Pasuk in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua says that the Sefer Torah has to be constantly on your mind. So now when we talk about constantly, so what's the definition of constantly? And it's very interesting. Rabbi Ami says that from Rav Yossi's opinion, so we are now given a definition of constancy. Constancy does not mean every moment. Constancy just simply means every day. And as long as you're learning daily, so that is considered a kiyum of Talmud Torah. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Filo Kara Adam El Kriya Shema Shachris Va'Arvis Kiyem Lo Yamush. So the Gemara quotes in the name of the Rashbi that even if, as long as you're saying Shema in the morning and Shema in the evening, so you have fulfilled the pasuk of Lo Yamush. V'davazer also la'amr b'fnei amei ha'aretz. However, caution. Caution is that where do you go public with this information? So don't share this information with the amei ha'aretz, those who are unlearned. Because they hear this and what are they going to say? Oh, I get it. So Shema in the morning, Shema in the evening, I get a check? Good. And they're not going to be incentivized to learn anymore. Now, Rava Amar Mitzvah Lo Amar Bifnei Amei Haaretz. And Rava says, no, I go the other direction. I think not only should you not avoid saying this to the Amei Haaretz, you should actually teach us to the Amei Haaretz. And how does that motivate them? How is that going to inspire them? So Rashi over here writes as follows. Mitzvah Lo Amar, I'm reading the Rashi inside. Desavar Mishum Kriya Shema, Notos Char Gadol Kazeh. Ki asta slechas darkecha imeya osa kolayam. Koshekein sheskara gado umargel es banav l'tam b'torah. So one pshat, says Rashi, is that look, they right, there's a recognition, there's an understanding of how much reward we're going to receive for the learning of Torah. So if you tell them that you're going to see tremendous reward for just learning one paragraph in the morning and one paragraph in the evening, so then from there you say, wow, and for that I'm going to get highly rewarded. Imagine if I learn more. So that's one way Rashi says it. Another way Rashi says it, Rashi Lishna Achrina, Savi Hanach Rabbanan, Damasi Pachin, Avshar, B'kriyash Ma, V'yalsi, Kuli Yom, V'garsi, Shbam Naschar, Gadol Yesh. They're going to watch the Chachamim. So the Chachamim, they, in other words, with the information that you only have to learn a paragraph in the morning and a paragraph in the evening, and they're watching the Chachamim learning all day. Oh, they're learning all day? Well, I don't understand. I thought it was just a mitzvah in the morning and just in the evening, and from there they're going to appreciate and realize how important Torah is that in, that they're being it's being learned the entire day. Good. Back to the Gemara. Shal ben Dama ben Achoso Shal Rabbi Shmuel es Rabbi Shmuel. So the great-nephew of Rabbi Shmuel asks his great-uncle the following question. Kagon anishi imadati kol haTorah kula. Now, I learned the entirety of Torah. Now, at this point, I'll just pause for a moment and ask the question, which I don't really have an answer to. What does that mean, kol haTorah kula? He learned all of Torah. Meaning, what is exactly encompassed within this body of Torah that he basically gave himself a check? Right? I got all of Torah. I learned all of it now. And I know all of it. So, okay. Meaning, obviously, Chumash. Let's include all of Tanakh, right? At that point in time, did they have Mishnayos and Gemara? Not totally clear. Anyway, however it is to be understood, he now gave himself a check for having learned Kol HaTorah Kula. So Malo Lomor Chachmas Yavanis. So can I now engage in the study of Chachmas Yavanis? Not the first time in this Masechta we heard about Chachmas Yavanis. We heard about it earlier in the Masechta. Now the truth of the matter is that when we heard about it earlier in the Masechta, the Chachamim were really really revolted by the idea of learning Chachmas Yavanis. Remember the incident that occurred earlier in the Masechta where we talked about the debate that took place amongst the brothers of the Chashmonaim family. So, right, Aristobulus and his brother. It'll come back to me. Okay, forgive me. Anyway, so the two brothers who were vying for the throne and one of them was basically locked in. In Yerushalayim, yeah. They were of the family, but no, the Greek names, the brothers had Greek names. Anyway, so one of them was locked in, and what they were doing is they were shipping in animals every day in order to bring the carbon tumit, and then through a chachmas yavanis, right, hand signals, if you will, however the coded messages went. But through Chachmas Yavanis, the information was disseminated to the Romans outside. Don't give them any more animals. In other words, it's the animals that are preserving them and keeping them. And so if you remember, the Gemara over there was a powerful Gemara, where instead of a sheep that was being raised and lowered up over the wall, so it was a chaz, it was a pig. So anyway, so the as a result of that, they had a ban, the Chachamim made a ban not to engage and learn in Chachmas Yavanis. Okay. What exactly is Chachmas Yavanis? Right. It's its own question and its own discussion. In the meantime, however, so he wants to know, can he engage in the study of Chachmas Yavanis? He knows Kol HaTorah Kula. So Karo Lava Mikra Azeh, so he read the following pasuk, Lo Yemushe Far Torah Azeh Mipicha, V'gisa V'yamam V'layla. What do you mean? There's no time. Or, let's put it this way. You know what? I'll tell you what. As long as it's not day and it's not night, so then you can learn Chachmas Yavanim. So tzeu baduk shashen olamina yom olamina laila olamod b'chachmas yavanis. So as long as it's not day and it's not night, so you're allowed to learn Chachmas Yavanis. Now we joked yesterday when we were learning the daf. Okay, so benesh mashos, you'll learn Chachmas Yavanis. But that was not the intent of the answer. The intent of the answer is no. In other words, you have a constant mitzvah to learn Torah, and so therefore don't think that there's time to learn Chachmas Yavanis. Now the Gemara says that there is another way to understand the pasuk in Yoshua. It's not an imperative, but rather it was a bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Yoshua. Ela bracha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yoshua should divrei Torah chavim alav biyoser. He saw how much, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw how much Yeshua loved learning Torah. Shenamar misharso Yeshua ben Nun nar lo yamish mitocha oel. Pasuk says that Yehoshua was constantly in the tent learning Torah with Moshe Rabbeinu. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yehoshua kol kach chaviv v'nalecha divrei Torah. You love Torah so much, Here comes the bracha. Lo yamush shefer haTorah zeh mipicha. So the Torah should never leave you. In other words, you should never have any kind of situation in which you would come to forget any of the Torah. So it was a bracha. So really interesting. So according to this pshat, so in other words, we lose the entire imperative from the pasuk in Sefer Yeshua. Clearly, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to learn Torah, right? V'limadatam osamas b'neichem. But in other words, but in terms of this pasuk of lo yamush and v'gisa bo yom v'layla, so according to this pshat, it is not an imperative; it's just simply a bracha. Okay. Tandaber Yishmal de v'Torah lo yalecha chova. Torah should not be viewed as a chova. Now, what does that mean? It should not be viewed as a chova. So, a couple of ways to suggest what the Gemara means by that. Rashi over here writes lo yalecha chova ka'adam sheyesh lo chova omer matay pareno v'ipater. In other words, don't look at it like a financial obligation, says Rashi. Financial obligations. So, what are you looking forward to? I can't wait till they're paid off. So, don't look at Torah the same way. Right, I learned a little bit. Good. Oh, I'm glad I got that over with. That's not the way you should view Torah. V'at Torah shalif Torah tzmacha mehen. But at the same time, however, don't say that you're ever going to be exempt and excused from the learning of Torah. See Tosus, by the way, for more ways of understanding this Gemara. But anyway, we continue. Amr chizka my dechsev af hasisecha mipitzar rachav lo mutzak tachteha. Gemara quotes the pasuk in Iyov. The Gemara interprets the pasuk in Iyov. Bar eish lo kemidas gosh baruch hu, kemidas basar vidam. The traditional contrast between the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates and the way we human beings operate. Midas basar vidam adam meisis chaver midarche chaim ledarche misa. So generally speaking, how does humanity work? So we do seduce others, but when we seduce others, generally speaking, and especially when you use the word hasasa, seduction, right? We do so for purposes that are not good. Right, the Torah uses it in the context of Avodah Zarah. We could use it in the context of a morality. But anyway, but generally speaking, our form of seduction, we seduce people to do bad things. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Meisis Adam Midarche Misa Darche Chaim. However, when we talk about Hasasa, seduction from the perspective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is just the opposite. He's seducing us to do good. So we turn back to the Pasuk in Iyov, and this is how we're to understand the Pasuk. He is maces. He seduces us, mipitzar, from the narrow mouth. What is that a reference to? The Gemara goes on to explain. So mipitzar rechav lo mutzak. I'm sorry. Last line. Migehenim shepitzar. So the pitzar that's referenced to in Iyov is a reference to Gehenim. It has a very narrow opening. Sheashena savur b'socha. And the reason why is just like an oven where. Basically, you want to try to do is you want to try to keep it tight, keep it sealed, so that the heat stays inside. Same thing with the Gehenna. V'shem atam rabbi kishem shepi atzar kach kula atzara. Now, maybe with a very narrow opening, maybe the rest of it's narrow as well. Not a lot of room in it for people. So tamalomer hamik harchev. So again, going back to the pasuk in here, not Iyov but Yeshayahu. So no, in other words, once you go in, it widens. So in other words, there's unfortunately, plenty of room. V'shem atam la melech lohuchna. Now, maybe it's not going to be. It's not set aside for a king. King over here, says Rashi, is not a reference to literally a king, but a tamach chacham. In other words, let's say you have a tamach chacham and yisar min haderech. So he deviated, and he needs to spend time in Gehenna. Maybe not for him. The Gemara says tamalamer gam he la melech huchan. No, the pasuk Yeshayahu says no. Melech will go there as well. V'shem atamar ein ba'itzim. Maybe there's no wood over there. Maybe it's just smoke. So tamalomar madurasa ish ve'itzim harbe. Again, going back to the pasuk Yeshayahu. Nope, plenty of wood, fire. V'shem atamar zehu schara. Now, maybe I would have thought. So you know what the schar of Talmud Torah is? Maybe the schar of Talmud Torah is just simply the absence of Gehenna. Maybe that's the entirety of the schar. Tamalamar v'nachash shochancha malo dashan. So the Gemara says no, because again, going one more time back here, we're headed back to the pasuk in Iyov. So no, in other words, for a person who is engaged in the study of Torah, so for him, it's not just that he's going to have an absence of Gehenna, but in other words, he'll have a table set for him. Okay, chal yom kippur lios b'Shabbos. Now, when Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos. So it presents a unique problem, and that is that the what are we going to do in terms of the eating of the musaf of Yom Kippur? On Yom Kippur, there's a musaf that's brought, again, not the Seir LaZazel, not the Seir LaHashem, but a standard carbon musaf that's brought on Yom Kippur. It's a chatas, which means that you have how much time to eat it? You have one day and the following night. Now, on a regular Yom Kippur, that's fine. So in other words, we're obviously not eating it on Yom Kippur. There's an Ister to eat it on Yom Kippur. But you wait until the evening, you eat it that evening. However, when Shabbos, I didn't mean Shabbos and Yom Kippur coinciding. I meant that Shabbos now is the day after Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur fell out on a Friday, and now the next day is Shabbos. And we all know, you probably expected me to raise this point, but we all know that with a fixed calendar, this would not happen. In other words, Yom Kippur would not fall out on a Friday the day before Shabbos, okay? But we are obviously talking about before there was a fixed calendar. Anyway, if Yom Kippur fell out on a Friday and the next day is Shabbos, so now for the Karma Musaf, so it presents a unique problem. In that, obviously, you're not eating it on Yom Kippur, which is Friday, but now when Shabbos comes, you can eat it on Shabbos. The problem is you can't cook it. So you couldn't cook it on Yom Kippur. You can't cook it on Shabbos. And so what we're looking at is the meat of a Karma Chatas, which is raw. Furthermore, you can't wait until after Shabbos to cook it because already by Shabbos morning, it's going to be disqualified with the psul of no star. So what do you do? So the Mishnah says, well, you had a group of people who were ready to eat it raw. Okay, sounds disgusting. It is. And you had a group of people who were ready to eat it raw, and the Mishnah over there describes them as Bavliim. You know, those Babylonians. Now, obviously, by the way, when we say Bavliim, so obviously we don't mean Babylonians, meaning the nationality of Babylonians, meaning we were talking about Jews from Babylonia. And not only Jews from Bavel, but obviously we're talking about Kohanim, meaning this is a Karban Musaf. Sorry. This is a Karban Chatas. It is a Karban Musaf. It's a Karban Chatas, which Chatas can only be eaten by the Kohanim. So we're talking here about the Kohanim who came from Bavel. And so presumably the Pshat in the Mishnah is, you know, those Kohanim who came from Bavel. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Baruchanam Rav Yochanan Lo Bavliim Halem Ela Alexandriam Haim. So really the truth of the matter is that we are not talking about Kohanim who came from Bavel. We're really talking about Kohanim who came from Alexandria. Omitoch Shisonim Es Bavliim Korin Osam Al Shem Bavliim. And really interesting, there was a general contempt that the Chachamim had towards Jews from Bavel. Now, why was there such a contempt from Jews from Bavel? Why was there contempt for Jews in general? But okay. But in other words, but over here it says Rashi, says Tosfos, really Tosfos. There's a specific contempt that they had for the Jews from Bavel, and it's very simple. They came back to build the Bais Sheni, and you know who didn't come back? Most of the Jews in Bavel, including the Kohanim. Kohanim did not come back. Even though they were called to come back to build Bais Sheni, they did not come back. And Tosfos writes, as a result of that, they were punished. Levim were punished, Kohanim were punished. Anyway.
Didn't Ezra establish Takana that the Levim...
Yeah, it was... That's correct. That part's true. Okay, but anyway, Tosha says it. Lefisha lo alu bime Ezra. Okay. So anyway, so they didn't come back, so there was a general contempt for the Bavliim, who did not come back. And so basically, as now used as a pejorative, as a derogatory way to describe people, Bavliim. In other words, even though in this particular case, the Kohanim in question over here were not really Bavliim, they were really Alexandrian. Tanya nami achir, Rav Yossi amar lo Bavliim, heim Alexandrian, heim. Umitoch shesonim, es Bavliim, korven osto al shem Bavliim. And the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Rav Yossi says exactly the point that we just made. Now, amar lo Rav Yehuda, tanuch ta'ez chashi nachta dati. Rav Yehuda says, thank God. Thank God that it's not really a reference to the Bavliim, but thank God it's a reference to the Alexandria. Rav Yehuda himself emanated from Bavel. His family was from Bavel. And now it's interesting, by the way, because clearly there was a general contempt for Jews from Bavel. But Rav Yehuda says, but what would have made it worse is that if the Mishnah here was describing these Kohanim who are so ready to eat raw meat, if they were actually Bavlanim, he says that would bother me. In other words, I'm glad to hear that they were not Bavliim, but they were in actuality Alexandrian. So at least now, we don't have now this reputation of being people who eat raw meat. Okay, now, one thing to take into consideration throughout this entire discussion as we now approach the end, and that is the Gemara over here is clearly looking at this as an act of vile. It's vulgar. You know, they're eating the raw meat. Can we contextualize this for just a moment? Meaning, why are they doing this? For a good reason. Meaning, what's the problem is that the Karban Chatas is being offered on Yom Kippur, generally eaten on Motzei Yom Kippur, but because it's Shabbos, so you can't cook it. So what are you going to do? And if we just let it lie overnight till Shabbos morning, it's going to become pasul through nosar. So the truth of the matter is that the Kohanim are eating it raw, but they're doing so as a mitzvah. So it's interesting that the Gemara over here is showing such a clear contempt for this vulgar act, and meanwhile they're doing it for a good reason. So Tosfos is bothered by this question, and Tosfos says, again, it's all in that first Tosfos on the Amud, and he writes, Alpha gav de mitzvah ka'avde, I start on the fourth line. Alpha gav de mitzvah ka'avde, shalo yavo li de nosar, lefi shir higilu atzmam kamo kein lo ochlam chayim, alpha cholashanim de mechze karav nusa. So Tosfos says, you know what? If they just did on Yom Kippur alone, so then they would not have been receiving this kind of criticism. However, they basically behave this way all the time. In other words, basically, when it came to the Friday Shabbos, or the Yom Kippur Shabbos scenario, so we knew, let's get those Kohanim. They eat raw meat all the time. And so really, the criticism is not for this one time that they did so, but rather it's because of all the other times that they did so. And even though this time it happens to work out to their benefit, to our benefit, they're doing a mitzvah, but this was, unfortunately for them, standard behavior.
How much did they have to eat in order to make it a valid...
They didn't have to eat any of it. In other words, the kapara comes through the sprinkling of the blood. But in addition to that, there's also a mitzvah to eat karban chatas. Kohanim have a mitzvah to eat karban chatas.
What is Hashem's expectation? To eat it raw or leave it?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Okay. Okay. The Mishnah continues. Siddur's alechem b'Shabbos v'esa b'zichem l'achar Shabbos. Now, before we start with this Mishnah, so again, let's recap what we all know, but let's make sure we got it down very well. Generally speaking, when we're talking about a carbon, once it's put into a kli sharis, it's imbued with kedushas haguf. As such, so now with this kedushas haguf, so now it has to be offered and today, and not tomorrow. However, with the lechem upon him, so a different expectation is expected, and it's a slightly different criteria. With the lechem upon him, so we bake it before Shabbos, which we're actually going to talk about later this morning, and we put it on the shulchan on Shabbos with the understanding and expectation that it's going to be there for a full week. So the truth of the matter is that for the lechem upon him on the shulchan, it does, even though the table imbues it with kedushas haguf, but it does not become pasul overnight. In fact, as long as it's on the table, we're good. And it'll sit there for a week, and then next Shabbos we take it off. Now, before we eat it, remember, there's shnei bazichin, two spoonfuls of lavona, which are going to be burnt on the mizbeach. Obviously, they're going to be burnt on Shabbos itself. It's doches haShabbos. And then with the burning of the two spoonfuls of lavona, so then we eat the lechem upon him. When I say we, I really mean the kohanim. And again, the division of the lechem upon him is that six of the loaves are going to go to last week's mishmar, and six of the loaves are coming to this coming week's mishmar. The changing of the mishmar is done on Shabbos itself. And the lechem upon him is going to be distributed, broken up, divided amongst last week's mishmar and this coming week's mishmar. Fine. With all that stated, what we're going to learn in the Mishnah are three scenarios in which it was not done properly. And as a result of it not being done properly, so now the lechem upon him cannot be eaten. In the third case of the Mishnah, which we're going to see, so there is a solution. You'll notice that in the first two cases of the Mishnah, there is no solution. And essentially, what's going to happen is disqualification. Let's see the three cases inside. See, there's a lechem b'Shabbos, so let's say the bread was set up on Shabbos correctly. But for whatever reason, the spoons were not put onto the shulchan on Shabbos, which they should have been, but rather they were put on Sunday. Now here comes the problem. Hikter's a bezichim b'Shabbos. So now, Shabbos number two. So they burnt the lavona. Problem is, they were not on the shulchan for a week, and as such, so now they were burnt incorrectly. They no longer are able to serve as a matir for the lechem upon him. So now, what's the story with the lechem upon him? They're disqualified. So puzzle. And ein chayav la mishum pigel nos v'tame. And on top of that, also, they're not going to be subject to the disqualifications of neither pigel, nor nosar, nor tame. Rashi explains each one. And I'll just simply say the Rashi's outside. Pigel, we know that in order for pigel to occur, the rest of the offering has to be offered correctly. And over here, because the bezichim were not on the table long enough, the burning of the bezichim were done incorrectly, and so therefore it can't result in pigel. Nosar. Nosar is only a disqualification if the carbon was edible, and then, because left overnight, now it becomes inedible. Over here, regarding the lechem upon him, because they were not Now, that happens to be the bread was put on correctly, but because the bezichim were put on incorrectly, the bezichim never served as a matir to the bread. Bread never becomes edible, and so therefore not subject to nosar. Tamei, a person who is tamei who eats carbon is subject to the kari's penalty. However, that's only if a Torah person was able to eat it. Because a Torah person in this case cannot eat the lechem upon him, because they were not nitar properly, they were not permitted properly, so therefore, a person who is tamei which is not going to be subject to kares. Scenario number two of the Mishnah. Seder is a lechem v'sa bezichem b'shabbos. So the lechem and the bezichem were both placed on the shulchan on Shabbos. Good, check and check. Ve'eter is a bezichem l'acher Shabbos. However, Sunday, so some kohen goes in, takes out the bezichem and burns the bezichem. So the bezichem have been on the table for a full day. Okay, that is obviously just one day short of a week, less than what it should have been. It should have been sitting on the table for the full week. So psula. So obviously now it's disqualified. Once again, not subject to the other disqualifications of pigul nosar v'tamei for exactly the same reasons which we explained just a moment ago. And the third scenario. Seder is a lechem v'sa bezichem l'achar Shabbos. Let's say the lechem and the bezichem were placed on the table on Sunday. Okay, so Shabbos, for whatever reason, it was not put on Shabbos. Should have been, but it was not. And now Sunday comes along Sunday, just one day later, and we put on both the lechem and the bezichem. So v'hikter is the bezichem b'Shabbos. So now the spoon of Lavona was burnt on Shabbos, meaning the following Shabbos. So psula. So that's no good. In other words, because neither the lechem nor the bezichem were placed on the shulchan long enough. Ketzad yasa. But here in this third scenario, we do have a solution, and that would be yinichen l Shabbos haba. So what we can now do is that we can leave the bread on the table for a second week. And at the end of the second week, now we're going to be able to consume the lechem upon him. Now, obviously, that means that on the first Shabbos, remember, we put them on the spoons and the lechem on Sunday. So now the first Shabbos, it rolls around. It has not been on long enough. The bezichem were burnt. Should not have been burnt, but they were burnt. So what we'll do is we'll get a new set of bezichem. We'll put it on the first. We'll put it on that first Shabbos. Then now the bread and the bezichem are going to be staying on for the full week to week segment. And now on Shabbos number two, you can offer the bezichem. Sha'afilu hi ala shulchan yamim rabim ein bakach klum. The bread was on the table too long. Says the Mishnah, no problem. And what we're going to be discussing in the Gemara is why is it no problem? We're going to come to that in just a little bit. Tanan Hasam. Now over here we're going to be quoting a lot of Mishnahs from Masechta Yuma. The purpose of quoting these Mishnahs is to get to a point. So right now for the next couple of minutes it's going to seem a little bit tangential, but all this brings us to a point which is going to be connected to our Mishnah. So I'm going to indulge for a little bit of patience. Tanan Hasam. We learned in the Mishnah in Yuma. Amar lema mamuna tsuru imigio zman shchita. So we're talking about the morning of Yom Kippur, and obviously there's a lot to be done that day. We're going to be shechting the carbon tamid as early as we can. So generally speaking, it was done sometime in the morning. Over here, really early in the morning, we're basically looking at the break of dawn. Imigio haroa amar barkai. Now, if in fact it's light enough, meaning we've hit dawn, so the observer is going to say barkai. It's dawn. Now, according to another opinion, so the question is a little more specific. Do you see enough light where it's lit all the way to Chevron? In which he has to respond yes. So basically, there's a question answer between the Mamuna, the appointed one, probably the Skan Kohen, in other words, some deputy Kohen Gadol, and an observer who was sitting out on his post observing when the first rays of light are hitting in the eastern sky. And over here is just a question and answer in terms of, is it dawn yet? Yes. Is it dawn all the way to Chevron? Yes. Rashi over here writes, by the way, that specifically Chevron, because it's Yom Kippur, and we're looking for Schos Avos on Yom Kippur. But in any event, and the reason why is because there was a morning, once upon a time, where the moon was out in the morning, and it gave everyone the impression, oh yeah, it's morning already. We have the light, we see illumination. And and it was not sunlight that was causing the illumination, but rather it was the moonlight that was causing illumination, and so they shechted the carbon too early. Shechtu es ha'tamid v'osil ha'beis ha'sreifa, So they shechted the carbon tamid on that particular morning, where it was not yet morning, it wasn't dawn, it was pre-dawn. And again, the illusion of dawn because of that moon. So, and as a result of that, they had to take the carbon tamid that was shechted and send it to the Beis HaSreifa, dispose of it, because it was not a kasher carbon. Just as a astronomical point over here, this event that they were referring to could not have been Yom Kippur.
No.
Because we know that we're talking about the moon in the morning. Moon in the morning is only the second half of the month, not the first half of the month. Right? For those of you who are moon watchers, I'm one of them. So there, in other words, but you'll follow that the pattern of the moon is that you'll only see the new moon only in the evening, and then as the month progresses, so you're going to be seeing it in the in the morning. Anyway, whatever. Right now, just trust me on that, and I encourage everyone should be a moon watcher. So anyway, so but the point is, however, is that there was an event that led them to shecht the carbon tamid too early, and that's why they were so meticulous about making sure that it was really done. Very deal, Kohen Gadol beis haTefila, and now the Kohen Gadol would go to the mikvah, because the Kohen Gadol was the one doing the avoda, and he would go to the mikvah in preparations. That klal yab b'miktosh klal meisech chesraglav ton tefila, as a general rule. If you're a Kohen who's about to do the avoda, so if you go to the bathroom and you go a number two, you defecate. So then you have to do a full tefillah before you do the avodah. If you urinate, so then you only need to wash your hands and feet in order to do the avodah. Again, as I mentioned, a lot of this is tangential. You'll see in just a moment what the point of all this is. Tini avod Rabbi Avon lo zibo v'nela filo osavo shenimlaka balayla mincha shenikmitza balayla teitzila beis hasreifa. It's not just an animal that was shechted at night that requires disposal because it's not the daytime and it's therefore going to be disqualified. It's also true regarding a bird that was nimlacked at night. It's also true regarding a mincha that was nikmats at night. So in other words, nighttime is just simply the wrong time to do these avodas and therefore disqualification. Now it's interesting, the language of the Gemara, even a bird. What does that mean, even a bird? Like you thought we would have been any more lenient regarding a bird? And Rashi says, as a havamina, yeah, we would have thought we would have been more lenient. Why? Rashi writes over here, because what's a bird as a carbon? A bird is never offered as a carbon sibor. A bird is only offered as a carbon yachid. Yeah, in other words. There are a lot of leniencies as it relates to a bird. So yeah, we would have thought that maybe the rules in terms of day versus night would have been a little bit more relaxed for a bird. Okay, but anyway, the point being, it's not more relaxed. Nighttime is just simply not correct. Now, Bishlam alosalo of Mishum Dalashala Dure. So the Gemara says here, look, I understand. You shecht an animal at night, you can't undo the shechita. You do malika to a bird at night, you can't undo that as well. Good. So I get it. It's disqualified. However, Ella Mincha Efshar de Mahad comes the duchte, becomes biyamama. But let's say there was a mincha offering that you did the kemitza and you did it at night. Okay? Fine. You did it at night. So take the kemitza and put it right back into the mincha. What's the big deal? And let's also take the following into consideration, because this clearly is what is going into the Gemara's factoring. When you do the kemitza regarding the mincha, so we're going to be assuming right now that it's nighttime, whatever flour, it's a cliche race, but whatever flour is going in there has no kedusha sagof. What do you mean no kedusha sagof? It went into a cliche race. Yeah, but it went into a cliche race at night. And we said that nighttime is just simply not a time of carbon. And so therefore, all the flour that's in there is not imbued with Kedusha Sagof. If you did Kemitza, it's a fistful of flour, but it's not Kometz. Meaning if it was bona fide Kometz, you can't just simply put it back. In other words, now you have a mixture of Kometz and Shirayim. But right now what the Gemara is assuming is it's nothing. Halachically, it's nothing. It has no designation. So the Gemara says, Utan la v'hu amala, klisharz mekashin shalob ezmanah. So the Gemara now introduces us to a Chiddush. You know what? I know it's nighttime, but it's in a Kli Sharis, and a Kli Sharis has the power to imbue it with Kedusha Zaguf, even at night. Even though Shalob is Manam. You can't offer it. You can't offer it until the daytime. It's still going to imbue it with Kedusha Zaguf, even at night. Now that represents a Chiddush. And the Gemara says, Meitzvei. It's such a Chiddush, but why don't we consider the following Braisa? Kol HaKra B'yom Kadosh B'yom. B'layla Kadosh B'layla. So the Braisa over here says that if something is offered during the day, it can only be imbued with Kedusha during the day. And if it's something that's offered at night, Rashi gives the example over here of Minchas Nesachim, so it can only be imbued with Kedusha at night. And if it's something that can be imbued with Kedusha during the day and the night, so then it's going to have Kedusha both day and night. Okay, and this last line is a little bit difficult, but anyway, but the point is, let's just stay focused on the basic point over here. That if it's something that can only be offered during the day, it can only be imbued with Kedusha during the day. You just told me that if I take the mincha and put in a kli sharis at night, it'll have Kedusha even though it's mechusar zman. The braisa we just quoted over here says no such thing. If it only can be offered during the day, it can only be receiving Kedusha during the day and not the night prior. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, first the Gemara articulates the question, by yom en b'layla lo, enu kadosh li kariv avakarsh li pasel. So the Gemara suggests the following, that when it goes into a kli sharis at night, it does not have enough kedusha saguf where it could be offered, but it does have enough kedusha saguf where it could be subject to disqualification. So another, and we've heard this before. This is not the first time that we've heard this idea throughout Zvachim and Menachos. That basically kedusha saguf comes in levels. One level of kedusha saguf where it has enough kedusha where it's eligible for all the disqualifications. And then there is the full Kedusha Saguf, which allows it to being offered on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says that we're in this middle ground right now. Moshe Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera says, are you in fact correct about all this? And now finally we come back to our Mishnah. The whole point of quoting all this was to get to our Mishnah. Seder Salachim Vesabizichim, Achar Shabbos. So our Mishnah taught us the following. Remember the third case of the Mishnah. The lechem and the bezichim were set up on Sunday. The ikters of bezichim is Shabbos. And the bezichim were then burnt on the mizbeach on the first Shabbos it encountered. And psula. So the Mishnah said disqualified. And then the Mishnah goes on to report. What do we do? Ketzad asa or yasa yinichenel Shabbos abash afilu al shulchan yam rabim ein bekach klum. So then just simply leave it on for another week. So in other words, so it goes from station to station, from Shabbos to Shabbos. And the fact that it was on for a couple of extra days, inconsequential. To which the Gemara says, inconsequential? Think about what we just all learned together. That if I have something in a kli sharis, even though it was premature, that is considered that it will give it kedusha saguf. So if we're right, that going into a kli sharis, and right now the Gemara is viewing the shochan as a kli sharis. So if you're telling me that something that goes into a kli sharis that is shelo bizmanam prematurely is going to in fact imbue with kedusha saguf, so then liktosh velipsol. So now what's going to happen is that bread on the shochan, and remember it was put on early, but we're saying that doesn't matter. It's still going to give a kedusha saguf. So what's going to happen now is that it's going to be sitting on the shochan longer than its time should be subject to the psul. So the Gemara says that's a great question. However, Avuah de Rabbi Avin nami mastisa kamar. But Avuah de Rabbi Avin, who was the one who presented this, he also has fantastic support because kasev laila ein mechusar zman. So the Gemara, yamim hayamim mechusar zman. He'll say like this: if we're talking about the night prior to the day, consider, we're really close to the point of time in which we're going to offer it. Now, I know you can't offer at night, but it's the night immediately prior to the day. That's considered mechusar zman, in which if the carbon is in that kli at that point in time, it's going to receive a kedusha saguf. If we're talking about days in advance, so then nothing. It's not going to have any kedusha whatsoever. And over here, by the lechem apanim, we're talking about days in advance. Meaning, when should we have put the lechem apanim on the table? Shabbos. When did we, in fact, do so? 6 days earlier, on Sunday. Again, seven, depending on whether you count the day or not, but you understand. In other words, we put it on Sunday. We put it so in advance that mamish, it doesn't receive any kedusha saguf whatsoever. Meaning, what Avuah de Rabbi Avin is arguing is that the night prior, okay, that'll give it kedusha saguf. But in other words, but days in advance, nothing. So the Gemara says, sof, the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but let's think this through. So the lechem went on the table on Sunday. Okay, so that's way too early. No kedusha saguf, I get it. But Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night. Friday night now, we are in a period of time where even though it's Mechusar Zman, but it's Mechusar Zman that will imbue with Kedusha. So and that means now the next morning, Shabbos morning, the first Shabbos it's on the table, so now it's going to become disqualified through the psul of Lina. So the Gemara says, so isn't that a problem? Ki matu laila debe shimsha likdash v'lipso. So I'm a Rava b'shekadim v'sile. So Rava says, I hear that as being a problem. The solution has to be that going into Shabbos, meaning Friday afternoon going into Shabbos, the lechem is taken off the table so that it's not sitting on the table Friday night. If it were, so then Shabbos morning it would be subject to the psul of Lina. Take it off the table before Friday night and then return it back to the table on Shabbos morning. That's Rava's solution. Marzutra v'itemer Rav Ashi Amar filo tema b'shol kidem v'silek. Kevin desidra shol kemitzvaso nasa kemisha sidra okof. And Marzutra gives a more fundamental answer. There's no need to do that. Because let's consider. When was the bread put on the Shulchan? On Sunday. Sunday is just simply the wrong day. So now, I know that the bread is sitting on the table. But was there I'll use the English language, but hopefully you'll get the idea, you'll get the sense. Was there a placement of the bread on the table? So what Marzutra is arguing is no. It's on the table, but there was no placement on the table. And because it was Sunday. In other words, the only time where it's halachically significant, if it was placed on Shabbos, or maybe even Friday night. But being placed on Sunday is nothing. Just happens to be that right now it's sitting on the table. And what Marzutra is arguing, therefore, is that even if it sits on the table on Friday night, it was placed on the table early, and now it's sitting on the Shulchan on Friday night, Shabbos morning comes, it's possible with Lina? Marzutra says, no, it's not. Because by virtue of the fact that it was put onto the Shulchan on the previous Sunday, so it's kemaisa kof. It's like a monkey did it, meaning it has no consequence whatsoever. It is a totally insignificant action, and so therefore it only starts counting on the Shabbos morning.
Isn't this analogous to the korban pesach that was like sacrificed like there on that morning there?
Is that a good analogy? Could be. Right. We had Tanaim who debated that issue in terms of whether that was good or not good.
Yeah.
Right.
So I can just say that it's got a unique status.
Right.
It's 10 days. That's what it seemed like.
The Gemara is operating, I hear that. The Gemara is operating with an assumption that at one point or another, even though it sits there for a week, at one point or another, it will be subject to Lina. Meaning, the Gemara, it's like impossible for the Gemara to fathom that there's no Lina. It has an extended period of time where it sits on the Shulchan, but eventually, in other words, on the time where you're supposed to take it off, Now it's subject to Lina. It's just like the Gemara can't see it any other way. Okay. We talk about the baking of the lechem upon him, and we talk about the baking of the she'al lechem. Okay, so what are we going to learn together in just a moment in the Mishnah is that you don't bake it on Shabbos. Now, if you recall, by the way, this actually is subject to a debate that we had earlier, because really it's a question of where do I bake it? Do I bake it, meaning I bake it in an oven? That little I know. Okay, I'm showing off my culinary expertise, but in other words, is the oven a klisharis? Is the oven not a klisharis? And you remember, this is the discussion we had earlier in the perek. If it's a klisharis, so you have to bake it on Shabbos, because if I baked the bread in a klisharis on Friday, so now what's going to happen is the next morning it's going to be subject to the psul lina. So okay, so that was the discussion that we had earlier. Let us assume right now that the bread is baked in an oven, but not in a klisharis, and great. And so that means to say that you don't have to bake it on Shabbos. What we're going to learn together now in our Mishnah is not only are you baking it on Friday, you can't bake it on Shabbos. Now, why can't you bake it on Shabbos? It's an interesting question. Shabbos is much easier to explain because Shabbos, meaning anything you could have done before Shabbos, so you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, that's the Klal Gadol that we learned earlier in the Perek. That's easy to explain. What's going to be a little bit more difficult to explain is what about the She'al Lechem and Yontif? Meaning the She'al Lechem is the Shavuos Mincha, and we're talking about baking on Yontif. Are you allowed to bake on Yontif? The answer is yes. Right? The Pasuk says that there's a heter of Ochel Nefesh, that we're allowed to do malachas for eating on Yontif. And we're not allowed to do every one of the malachas. It's limited which number of malachas we're allowed to do, but we're allowed to bake on Yontif. You're allowed to cook and bake on Yontif. So what about baking the She'al Lechem on Yontif? So we're going to learn together. No, you can't. The question, of course, is why not? Why can't you bake the Shtei Halachim on Yontif? That's going to be a little bit harder to explain, but I'll explain in just a moment. Shtei Halachim. Now, the way this Mishnah operates, one more introductory remark for the Mishnah. The way the Mishnah is going to operate is basically, we're going to give the number of days separating baking and eating, and we're going to count the day that it's baked, and we're going to count the day that's eaten. Okay, and just so when we're talking about 2 days over here, we mean day one in which you bake it is day one. The day two when you eat it, that's the second day. So that's why we're going to count that as 2 days. Okay. So, Shtei Alechem Nechalos Ein Pachos Mishnah V'lo Yoser Shlosha. What's going to be your range for the Shtei Alechem in terms of the number of days between baking and eating? It's going to range anywhere between 2 and 3. Small range. Now, Ketzah Nefos Merav Yomtov Nechalos B'Yomtov L'Shnayim. So, generally speaking, it's baked on Erev Yomtov. And you eat it on Yontif. So that's 2 days. Chal Yomtov Lios Achar Shabbos. Now let's say Shavuos falls out on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Now the Baitusim that year are very happy. Not that we're happy that they're happy, but they're happy that year. So anyway, so let's say Shavuos falls out on a Sunday. So now that means that Erev Shavuos is Shabbos. You can't bake the lecha. You can't bake the Shtei Lechem on Shabbos. So now Nechalos L'Shosha. So that means they're baked on Friday. So now there are 3 days separating the baking and the eating. We're going to now do the same thing for the lechem apanim. Lechem apanim nechal ein pachus mitisha v'lo yoser al echad asar. Now here the range is going to be anywhere between 9 to 11 days between baking and eating. And the Mishnah goes on to explain. Ketzad, nefer me'erev Shabbos v'nechal b'Shabbos letisha. In a standard week, we're going to be baking the lechem apanim on Friday, putting it on the table on Shabbos, having it sit there on the table for another Shabbos, until next Shabbos. So that's a total of 9 days. And again, 9 days, we're counting the day of baking and the day of eating. Chal Yom Tov Lios Erev Shabbos. Now, if Yom Tov falls out on a Friday, so I can't break the Lechem upon him, not on Shabbos and not on the Friday. So we're backing up the baking to Thursday. So Nechal La'asara. So then we're going to have 10 days separating baking and eating. Shnei Yamim Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah. Now, let's say the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Now, just make some obvious points over here. Why are we talking about 2 days of Yontif? Because we're in Eretz Yisrael. There's no 2 days of Yontif in Eretz Yisrael. There's no 2 days of Yontif, but there are 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. And the answer is that's correct. That's absolutely right. Meaning the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are for different reasons than the 2 days of Yontif. When we get to Masechta Beitza, again, Emir Hashem, so I'll explain it a lot better in terms of why that is. But anyway, even Bisman Beis HaMikdash, there were 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. So that now means that you can have Thursday and Friday both being Rosh Hashanah. Now when do I bake the lechem upon him? And we all know the answer. It's very simple. You back it up to Wednesday. So now, Nechal L'Chadasar. So that means 11 days separating the baking of the lechem upon him and the consumption, which is going to be a week and a half from now. 11 days. Ve'en Adoch Elo Osa Shabbos V'lo Osa Yontif. And it does not override Shabbos nor Yontif. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Hasgan, Doches Yontif, Ve'en Adoches Yom Atzom. So a dissenting opinion in the Mishnah where there is an opinion that says that the baking does override Yontif, but not Yom Kippur.
Okay.
The predominant position of the Mishnah is that the baking of the Shtei Halachim and the Lechem upon him does not override Shabbos nor Yontif. Okay, let's talk about the Shtei Halachim and why it does not override Yontif. It's a little bit difficult to understand. Meaning there's a heter to bake and cook on Yontif, so why not over here as well? So the pasuk that gives us the heter for baking is found in Parshas Bo, and the Torah says, "Acha sheyachol l'chol nefesh hu levado yaseh lechem." So the things that we're going to consume, hu levado yaseh lechem. So those are the things that we could do. But the pasuk ends with the words lachem, and the Gemara darshans. Now Gemara's not here. The Gemara is back in Pesachim. The Gemara darshans lachem v'lo lagavoa, meaning we are only allowed to cook and bake for private usage, but not legavoa, not for the Beis HaMikdash. Now, over here, you can argue very simply. Oh, well, wait 1 second. In other words, it's not going on the Mizbech, the Kohanim are eating it. But, as we've said time and again, and we're going to say it again as well right now, yes, the Kohanim are eating it, but Mishuchan Gavoa Kazachu, right? They're eating off of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's table. Meaning, it's the way to fundamentally view it is that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, it's just that the Kohanim have a right to eat it. So that means to say that it does not fall under the heter of lachem. That is the Gemara's understanding of why it is you're not allowed to bake it on Yontif. Amar Avina. Okay, and let's just finish up the parak. Amar Avina. L'divrei ha'omer nedarim nedarim v'sein kreivim b'yantav. Now, there's an opinion espoused in the Gemara in Beitza, which the Gemara over here is reviewing, and that is Nedarim Nedavos cannot be offered on Yantav. Let's all consider. I make a Neder. That's a voluntary offering in which I go to the Beis HaMikdash and make good on my pledge, which I'm going to bring a carbon. Neder, personal liability. Nedava, no personal liability. But anyway, but they're voluntary offerings. Can I offer a Neder on Yantav itself? Well, let's think it through. Meaning, it's a very similar discussion. But let's think this through. On one hand, it's a carbon. On the other hand, I'm going to eat most of it. I'm going to eat most of it. Kohanim will get a piece. Yeah, the Imurim will go on to the Mizbech. But basically, it's my dinner. So why not offer Nedarim and Nedavos on Yantav? So it's a machlokus in the Gemara Beitza whether you can or you cannot. Let's right now take the position that you can't. Why can't you offer Neder and Nedava on Yantav? So you can make two arguments. The Gemara is going to reject one of the two arguments. One argument you can make is that it's a din derabbanan. The rabbis told us not to. Meaning, fundamentally, you could, but the chachamim banned it. Why? Why would they do such a thing? Because we know, when you make a pledge of a neder nedava, you're now officially on the clock. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that you have three yantavs. Exactly how to count those three yantavs? The Gemara over there, Rosh Hashanah, discusses, debates, deliberates, but right now, for our purposes, just know. You're on the clock that you have to bring it. Anything that would push off and delay you bringing your neder nedava, Chachamim did not like that. So over here, what are you saying to yourself? I made a neder, I made a nedava, and now I'm on the hook to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. And you know what? 6 months from now, I'm going up anyway. So I'm really busy right now doing nothing. But let me not go up now. I'll go up later. Anything that would serve as an incentive to a person to wait till later, the Chachamim said, we don't like that. So one suggestion the Gemara is going to reject is that really it's a din derabbanan, and the reason why the Chachamim made a gzera is because this would encourage people to delay not bringing the Nedarim and Nedavos on time. That's one possibility. And what the Gemara is about to say is, I don't like that reason. So Amar Ravina, L'divrei Omer Nedarim Nedavos Ein Kreivim B'Yantav Lo Tema Midaraisa Mechzei Chazav Rabbanu Degazrei Shelo Yishah. So maybe the reason why is because of a rabbinic concern that people will delay, like I just got done explaining. The Gemara happens to have been just much more succinct than I am. So Ela Midaraisa Nami Lo Chazeh. It's a Din Daraisa. And how do I know that, says the Gemara? Because consider what we just learned in our Mishnah. The Ashtei Alechem Dechavas Ayomhu. Because consider, Shtei Alechem, it's an obligation to bring it on Shavuos. Obviously, there's no concern about delay, because you bring it today. We're supposed to bring it today. And meanwhile, our Mishnah says that you can't bake it on Yantav. So in other words, there's no concern of Gzeira D'Rabbanan, and meanwhile, the Mishnah is taking the position you can't bake it. It must be that for those who are taking the position that Nedarim and Nedavos can't be offered, and Shtei Alechem, even though it's not voluntary, we understand that, even though it's not voluntary, but our Mishnah is espousing that same viewpoint that because it's not Lechem, because it's not exclusively for you, so therefore there's no heter to do so, and it's not a Din D'Rabban, but rather it's a Din D'Araisa. Good. So the Gemara is just simply pointing out that this position is not rooted in a din derabbanan, but it's understood as a din d'araisa. Hadron alach she'alechem, that's the end of the 11th parak. Yirtzeh Hashem, tomorrow morning, we begin the 12th parak of the Masechta.